This is Voices from Appalachia Radio Show, sponsored by the Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities at Shepherd University. I'm Brian Staggers, and here's your host, Bianca Eisen.
Today, we want to welcome Shepherd University's new provost, Dr. Stephen Spencer, to talk about his Appalachian heritage. Dr. Spencer comes to Shepherd from Athens State University, the oldest institution of higher education in Alabama, established in 1822, where he served as Dean of the College of Arts and as English Department Chair. Dr. Spencer stepped into the position of Provost and Academic Vice President for Shepherd University in June of this year. Stephen, welcome to Voices from Appalachia Radio Show.
Thank you, Bianca.
To begin with, I'm interested to know, what drew you to Shepherd University and uplifting your family from Alabama to the panhandle of West Virginia?
Well, I really did not know much about Shepherd. I had not been to this particular place in West Virginia. It was, you know, one of those places I kind of passed by on the way to the East Coast, you know, or somewhere else. So I looked at the job announcement and began doing some research on Shepherd, and I found that the mission, the values of the institution were really appealing. So they seemed to fit my own values and the kind of place I was looking for. I really appreciate that Shepherd is a public university, but it's also, you know, firmly grounded in the liberal arts and sciences, so students get that broad experience. And I'm an English major myself, and my PhD is in English. So, you know, that was really appealing to me, that we could do both. We could have that public university mission, but at the same time, have that kind of liberal arts experience that I had in my own education, and that I think is so important in preparing students for success in so many kinds of ways. You know, so and then my family, we were living in Alabama at the time, and we didn't know much about West Virginia, and so we started looking into Shepherdstown and the community, and we just were amazed at the opportunities, the proximity to D.C. metro area, Baltimore, the East Coast. It really is an amazing location. And I love to be outdoors. I love to kayak and hike. And, oh, so right here, you know, just a few minutes from my house in Shepherdstown, I can be on the Appalachian Trail. I can hike throughout the whole area. I can kayak on a river and other kinds of places. The bike path. So it just has so many opportunities that are life enriching, I would say.
Speaking of your family, you didn't just move here from Alabama, but you actually have roots in Eastern Kentucky, mm-hmm. correct?
Mm-hmm. Right. Both of my parents were born and raised in Eastern Kentucky, and they, like many people from Appalachia, made that move north in the 40s and 50s for opportunity. So my dad's family was from Owsley County, Kentucky, so far eastern, southeastern Kentucky. And they moved up to Covington, Kentucky when he was a teenager, and settled in that Cincinnati area. It was all about opportunity and jobs. My mom's family is from Oppie, Kentucky in Martin County, and that is on the Tug River across from West Virginia. So it's as far east as you can get in Kentucky. And they moved when my mom was a teenager to Columbus, Ohio. And my grandfather went from coal mining to working in a factory in Columbus. And both my grandfather and grandmother worked at in an auto parts plant for their whole careers after moving to Columbus. And so my family has those roots in Eastern Kentucky. And as anyone from that part of the world knows, even when people leave, they never give up or lose that connection to the place. And so throughout my life, we were always visiting family in those areas. There were family reunions on my mom's side of the family. And every year, the reunion was held at the family cemetery at the end of the holler, way up in the mountains above Hoppy, Kentucky. And I remember traveling there, and even later in life, taking my son there when he was young. And you drive to the end of a one-lane road up the holler, and then it becomes a completely dirt road that goes right up the mountain. Basically, everyone needs a four-wheel drive just to get up to the gravesite. And then up there at the gravesite is, you know, a couple of shelter houses, and that's where the family gathers for reunions. And there's one shelter house is where the preaching takes place. So anyone who wants to preach will speak, and so that goes on for hours. And so you've got that side of the event, and then there's the other shelter house that has the food. So, you know, so people are just there, they're listening to preaching, some people are playing music, and everyone's celebrating, you know, their family and their heritage. And usually it also means that members of the family volunteer to clean up the cemetery every year, so it keeps it clean. And you know, that was an experience that was just, you know, one of those in some ways so unique to Appalachia and such a mountain experience.
How would you compare your experience with the time you spent in Eastern Kentucky to when you were living in more urban areas of the U.S.?
Well, it's culturally different in so many ways. You know, living in more urban areas, there is, of course, you know, the whole urban experience and people from different places. Language is obviously very different. And when I was really young, just starting school, my dad, he was a minister, and he took an appointment to pastor in Guam. So when I was just starting school, my family moved from Columbus, Ohio, where we were living at the time, to Guam. So, you know, my earliest memories really are kind of began around that time. So we lived there until I was 12 years old or so. And then my father had an appointment in Hawaii. So on the island of Oahu, so we pastored a church there until I went to college. It's a bizarre kind of background in lots of ways. I have that Appalachian cultural heritage on both sides of my family, every branch. And then I have that early experience in southern Ohio, in the Cincinnati area primarily, where much of my family still live. And my wife is also from that area. But then I have all this experience in experiencing island life. And so, you know, really diverse kinds of experiences in my background. But, you know, that shaped who I am, and it shaped my values in all kinds of ways.
And I understand it's also shaped some of your literature.
Yes, yes.
Would you like to share some with us?
Yeah, I want to share a poem from that was inspired by my grandmother on my father's mother. As I said, they lived in Owsley County, Kentucky, and historically, it's actually been the poorest county in the United States, and it still is. And today, there are only about 4,000 people living in Owsley County. So it really has not changed much in over 100 years. So when my dad was a teenager, he moved up to Covington, Kentucky, like so many families from Appalachia moving north. And then just before I was born, he was actually drafted into the Army. And because of his faith, he was planning to go into ministry. My grandfather was a country preacher. My great-grandfather was a circuit-riding Methodist preacher in the hills of Kentucky. So he went around to different churches and was their minister. So my dad was following in his father's footsteps. He got drafted. And because of his faith, he went in as a conscientious objector. And so he was trained as a nurse and then worked at a hospital in Heidelberg, Germany. That was his primary station. So imagine this kid, you know, he had really, I don't think he had ever been much further than Kentucky and Ohio. So he went from that experience to be a nurse in a hospital in Germany. I mean, what a life transforming experience. And it did transform his life from that moment on. He had wanderlust and wanted to see the world. And that is kind of what led to my experience as a child, you know, because he wanted to travel and see the world. While we lived in Guam, we had the opportunity to travel throughout Asia as a part of that experience. So his mother, my grandmother, Anna Laura was her name, she was very much the quintessential mountain grandmother. And every Sunday night when I had the opportunity to attend my grandfather's church in Cincinnati, she would sing every Sunday night. And she would sing the same song, and it was her favorite song. And, you know, she had that, you know, that kind of wistful Appalachian voice, you know, that we hear so much in bluegrass music. It just kind of has a sadness to it, you know, a sadness about. She would sing the Good Old Gospel Ship. And it was her song every Sunday night. So when I had that opportunity, I remember her singing that. So this poem is inspired by that experience, and it's called Sunday Night in the Mountains. Anna Laura sang her favorite song every Sunday. I'm going to take a trip in the good old gospel ship. I'm going far beyond the sky. Crowded to the walls in the church, in the valley, between the mountain and the muddy river, folks in Sunday overalls sang down the almighty power of God. If you're ashamed of me, you have no cause to be, for with him I am an heir. Women danced in the aisles, heads jerked back and forth, hairpins and shoes flew. Children hid beneath pews on the sawdust floor to escape flailing arms. If too much fault you find, you'll surely be left behind while I go sailing through the air. A wayward teen ran to the altar to be saved from eternal damnation in hell. The week before, he had let in a pig during Sunday night testimony service. I'm going to shout and sing until all the heavens ring while I'm bidding this world goodbye. The music drifted through the valley, proclaiming the word to raccoons and water moccasins.
That was lovely.
Thank you.
Would you like to share another piece?
I haven't talked about my mother's family yet. And my mom was born and raised in Oppie, Kentucky. So no one ever knows where Oppie, Kentucky is. So it's just a spot, you know, on the Tug River between Kentucky and West Virginia. It's in Martin County. Martin County is also one of the poorest counties in America, slightly higher population than Owsley County, but it's right in the heart of coal mining country. So, you know, at some point, everyone there was involved in either mining or driving trucks for coal companies. And, you know, it's also the area that experienced a lot of violence in the mining wars and union conflicts. So my grandfather was a coal miner there, and he was a member of the union. And for his whole life, he was a staunch defender of unions. He had seen how they could empower workers. So when he moved to Columbus when my mom was a teenager, both my grandmother and my grandfather worked in the auto manufacturing industry. They were lifelong union members. So it's kind of an interesting difference between my two the two branches of my family. On the one side, you know, we're kind of the preachers and very much entrepreneurs. That, in addition to preaching, you know, many of them, they owned a gas station or a furniture store, and some of those businesses are still thriving down in Owsley County. On my mom's side, very much coal mining and, you know, that some of those hard working class experiences in Eastern Kentucky. So my mom lived on a dirt road until she was a teenager and they moved to Columbus. And she was the oldest of eight children. And she tells this great story of taking her brothers and sisters to school every day. So on the Kentucky side of the river, there was no road or no way to get to the school. So every morning, my mom at 10 or 11, imagine this happening, they would walk down to the river, they would get in a rowboat, go across the Tug River in all kinds of weather, and then they would walk up the river to a bridge and cross back over to the Kentucky side to go to school. They did this every day. So that kind of experience, imagine that today and thinking about what that must have been like. It wasn't that long ago. This is not like it's ancient history. This happened in my mom's lifetime, and she is 75. So it's just amazing that people lived that experience. So they lived in the mountains in a very narrow holler, and my grandfather was a coal miner, which was a hard way to make a living in the 40s and 50s. Like many people in Appalachia, they had small gardens. They lived off the land. Once in a while, maybe they shared the hog with neighbors, and they raised it together. But they had some chickens, maybe. But the meat they ate was what my grandfather hunted and fished in the rivers in eastern Kentucky. So I grew up, when I visited, eating groundhog and squirrel and they ate everything. And that was his experience. So when he moved to Columbus, Ohio, think about how in some ways he had to feel displaced. He went from being in the mountains, in that valley, hunting, fishing, providing for his family in those ways. They had to carry water to their house from a spring nearby. So he's in Columbus, Ohio, urban industrial area. It's flat also. So he was always looking for the wild, right? So he was always, even though it was an urban experience, and in fact, when they moved there, they lived in what is now Germantown, in a very trendy, cool area in Columbus, gentrified. They lived, then it was mostly, at that point, poor people from Appalachia, poor people from the mountains. They lived in an apartment above a bar in downtown Columbus. So here he is from the mountains. So he had to find those experiences. So he found where he could fish and hunt and still experience that part of his life. This poem is inspired by my mother's father. His name was Alva. And he also was drafted in World War II. He was actually shot in the leg in the invasion at Normandy. So that ended his war experience at that point. He never talked about it, though. It was an experience he really never, ever talked about. I just knew about it from other family members who knew that story. But in my experience with him, when I would visit, he loved music, and he had this really old Gibson guitar. And he would bring that out every time we visit, and he would make me play the piano. So we would sit and play old gospel songs and bluegrass music. And so that's one of my best memories of my grandfather's, sitting and listening to him and playing and how much he enjoyed that. So this poem is about his experience and that journey from the mountains to that urban place. So this poem actually is, it first appeared in the Journal of Kentucky Studies, and it's also in a poetry anthology called Coal, and so it's called Alva's Life. He sipped his black coffee from a bowl and took a bite of the raw onion like an apple. He strummed his worn Gibson guitar, and the high nasal tone of I'll Fly Away transported him back to the hills, where he fished the Tug River in the moist summer nights, where he hunted rabbits, squirrels, and groundhogs to feed Emma and his five children, where he rose each day before dawn to work in the mine, where his firstborn twins died before they were two. They buried them at the family gravesite on the side of the mountain at the end of the holler, where the family gathered for reunions and listened to preachers for hours, one after another, on sin and salvation, while the children chased each other around the tombstones of their ancestors. And the sinners sat at tables, eating fried chicken and smoking hand-rolled cigarettes. The northern city promised a better life. On his days off, he found the wild, where he camped and fished on the Scioto's banks, where he dug night crawlers for extra money and stored them in a refrigerator on the back porch, where he raised vegetables inside the chain-linked yard of his aluminum-sided ranch house. The doctors at the VA hospital could not say if it was the coal dust or the asbestos from the rake factory that finally did him in. The hill people came up to his funeral dressed in bib overalls and dirty boots. Beside the coffin was his picture in uniform, young, crisp, and serious, before he got his leg shot at Normandy. But he never once mentioned the war. The grandsons sang "I'll Fly Away" and carried him to the final spot, where a dash between two dates on a simple marker in a treeless cemetery with dirt lanes surrounded by gravel pits and vacant industrial lots diminishes the span between birth and death.
Sounds like it's pulled straight from a memory.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Stephen, I'd like to change gears a little bit. You talked about how your family, and even my family from Eastern Kentucky, economically, they were forced to leave the region. And this is something that's continuing today with students who are graduating. Many are more interested in leaving the region than staying here and trying to improve. So what are your thoughts about turning around this troubling demographic?
Yeah, that's a hard question in many ways. There is just simply not much opportunity for young people in those areas. And as we all know, so much of the economic development for generations was a result of outsiders coming in and developing mines and strip mining and other kinds of things, even forestry. And then all those resources left and went out. And when the land was used up, what happened to the jobs and the people? The people are left there with no opportunity, no jobs, and the land was decimated in lots of ways. So in some ways, that has just not changed. In fact, my parents just went down to Owsley County just about 2 weeks ago, and they went to visit the Spencer family cemetery down there, and they were just telling me that right now nothing much has changed. There's still not much opportunity. There's always talk of opportunity that might come, ways that the government might come in and develop projects or fund educational opportunities and things like that. But I think the reality is not much of that is actually happening. And so how can we blame young people for wanting to pursue opportunity? And where is that opportunity? It's somewhere else. They have to leave to go to school. And those who have ambition, those who can go to college outside of that area, or who can move, they do. So, I wish I had a solution to that. We talk about that a lot in higher education even, but the reality is I do not think there has been really much that has had a positive impact on the place. And, I don't know how to solve that problem or address that problem. Maybe that's something at Shepherd that we could certainly think about, and ways that we can have those conversations through our Appalachian Studies program, and maybe thinking of what are some ways that we could bring opportunity to that part of the country and try to have some impact that would improve things. So I wish I had I wish I had a solution.
Well, this does lead into my last question, because unfortunately we are running out of time. What are your own personal goals for these Appalachian students here at Shepherd that make up the majority of our population here, and your goals as a West Virginia educator for higher education?
Well, I think that was something that I thought was appealing about Shepherd. We have an Appalachian Studies program. This is distinctive in many ways. I think it's an opportunity to be to lead conversations about how we can both celebrate this area. It's a rich tradition of music, storytelling, poetry, fiction, right? All kinds of rich cultural opportunities. I think that there are opportunities to talk about how we can think about the land, the geography of the place. I've had so many people in environmental studies and biology, for example, talk about the Appalachian region as maybe one of the most diverse bioenvironmental areas in the United States. So how can we think about that as a way to promote this part of the world? People also talk about how this area will also be positioned as we continue to see the effects of global warming and climate change, that this part of the country is actually one of the places that will have less of an impact, or be a place that will continue maybe to thrive when there are severe climate changes taking place in other regions. So how can we also think about that and the future of this place? And for West Virginia, one of my priorities as provost will be to lead conversations about how we can help more students access higher education. So right now, West Virginia is dead last in the percentage of high school students who are going to college. We're dead last. So I think Shepherd, as a public institution, has an opportunity and also an obligation to work with our other institutions in the state, with state officials and local officials and private donors and companies, to figure out how we can provide a pathway for more of those high school students in West Virginia to have access and opportunity to higher education. And, you know, that is absolutely critical, I think, for the future of the state. So that's certainly something that is very much on my mind.
Well, I'm afraid that brings us to the end, Stephen. Thank you so much for taking the time to join me today.
My pleasure, Bianca. Thank you.
My guest today was Dr. Stephen Spencer, who serves as the new provost and academic vice president for Shepherd University. He previously served as dean of College of Arts and Humanities and English department chair at Athens State University, Alabama's oldest institution of higher education. Thank you all so much for joining me today. And until next week, I'm Bianca Eisen.
Voices from Appalachia Radio Show is sponsored by the Center for Appalachian Studies and Communities at Shepherd University, with the following created to enhance and develop the cultural and economic life of West Virginia and the Appalachian region. Academic programs that include an Appalachian Studies minor, an interdisciplinary BA, BS undergraduate degree, and a graduate certificate and master's degree in Appalachian Studies at Shepherd University. Celtic Roots and Global Appalachia Study Abroad and Celtic Heritage Series. The Appalachian Heritage Writers in Residence and Writers Award, which support the West Virginia Center for the Books, One Book, One West Virginia Common Read Selection. The West Virginia Fiction Competition. The Anthology of Appalachian Writers, an annual anthology featuring writing by the Heritage Writer, and poetry, fiction, creative nonfiction, essays, and photography created by Appalachian writers across the region and the world. Voices from the Misty Mountains, NEH, and West Virginia Humanities Council Teacher Institutes. Shepherd Speaks StoryCorps Project. And this radio show, in cooperation with Shepherd University Public Radio Station, WSHC-FM. To learn more about our degree programs or upcoming events, visit us at our website at shepherd.edu/appalachian. Or at our Facebook page, Appalachian Studies Program at Shepherd.